to dissect and fully understand those stolen memories, and even longer to piece them together correctly. But it didn't matter. He had her now, a mate to fill the void within him. He didn't care that they were from different worlds. He didn't care that the Empire was the enemy of her people. She made him complete again, and his loyalty was with her now, above all else. Chapter 30. Rickle was fully recovered now, and Aaron was fully dressed. They'd found her clothes in an empty waste bag, and she'd wasted no time dressing herself and picking select weapons off the dead guards until she was armed with a decent arsenal of bolt guns of varying sizes. Rickle's nanites had recharged enough for him to be able to form his armor again, but he'd needed to do something to get to that point. What exactly that thing was, she wasn't sure, because he'd asked her to step out of the room for a moment. His voice had been subdued, and his eyes had been downcast, as if he were suddenly self-conscious. When he'd emerged, his muscular form had been encased in his customary suit of exo-armor again, and Aaron had given him a short, sharp shrug, as if to say, "Don't worry about it." She suspected that whatever he'd done to regenerate so quickly had something to do with the bodies on the floor, but he hadn't wanted to share, and she hadn't wanted to know, so she'd let it drop. Together, they stalked down the dim corridors of the nameless surveillance ship, searching for a way out. Rickle had no weapons. Aaron had offered him a bolt gun, but he'd sniffed disdainfully at the weapon, muttering something about inferior human technology. And, for some reason, that had made her laugh, granting them a moment of levity in such grim circumstances. The lower decks of the ship were strangely deserted. The subdued agents who had been monitoring all kinds of surveillance equipment had disappeared, and there was no trace of either E-1 or E-2. Aaron wasn't sure how many Rickle had killed, but it had to be close to half the guards on board the ship. So where were the others? "They think they can ambush us," Rickle whispered as they entered the bridge. Even the navigators had disappeared, leaving the ship to be manned by its AI. "Don't worry. I will kill all of them." "Don't," Aaron said, giving him a stern look. "Do what you need to do, but don't kill people who are defenseless. Not everyone on board this ship is a soldier. They might be doing weird, fucked up shit here, but they think they're doing it for the good of their race. For my race. They think they're doing the right thing. I'm sure you, of all people, can understand that." He quirked an eyebrow. "I will try, but I can't promise anything. Sometimes things just happen." "Don't they just," Aaron said dryly, as they passed through the bridge and down a narrow corridor. The corridor ended, widening into a small docking area, where the only way out was beyond the thick metal walls of the ship, into space. The surveillance cruiser wasn't huge, and its docking area was only big enough for things like small escape vessels, mobile airlocks, and maintenance craft. There were weird-looking things in here, too. Mysterious objects that could have been satellites or sophisticated spy equipment. To one side sat an array of escape pods, housing just enough seats to fit all the crew. "Where the hell have they gone?" Aaron shook her head, astounded that the entire crew of a ship could just disappear like that.
"Shh." Rickle held up a hand, his ears twitching. "They are tracking us."
"They?"
"Human soldiers. I can hear their footsteps. They all walk a certain way, even you. But unlike them, the way you walk is special. Sexy."
"Oh."
Well, that was nice to know. Rickle had been analyzing her walking patterns. What else had he observed about her? They think to trap us here. He smiled coldly. Stay here and keep your guns ready. I'll hold the corridor. They won't get past me, but be ready just in case. Aaron nodded as Rickle disappeared down the corridor. All the while, she thought they'd been walking around the ship blindly. But now she realized he'd been looking for a place such as this. A narrow, difficult place where he could pick his opponents off one by one and keep her safe at the same time. Perhaps, with his uncanny hearing, he'd known where they were the whole time. It was good to have a Cordolian at one side, even if he'd lost all his Kalidom weapons. He still had his armor and his fists, and for these particular opponents, that was enough. Chapter 31 Rickle fought like a whirlwind as Aaron held her position, listening carefully for any signs his guard had been breached. But nobody got past him. When the dust had settled and the noise had died down, she found the corridor littered with bodies. That was nothing new, considering it was Rickle she was with. Not a single soldier had been able to reach her. In the end, all Aaron had to do was wait. Rickle returned to her, appearing casual and relaxed, the whole incident barely taxing him. The terrible truth, as Aaron had rightly suspected, was that humans were no match for a First Division warrior. He didn't even have weapons on him, and he'd dispatched them so easily. "I think I'm going to claim this ship in the name of the First Division. It has weapons, unlike the Arwen. It will do for now." "You can't just..." "Claim a Federation surveillance cruiser," Aaron was going to say, but she held her tongue. Rickle could. The Cordolians could. They took what they wanted and made no apologies. "Let us go back to the bridge and try to make contact with my brothers. My comm device was destroyed during the blast, and if they don't hear from me soon, they might just declare war on humans." His words sent a chill through Aaron, but a half-crooked smile graced his features. "You shouldn't joke about things like that," she grumbled as they reached the bridge. It was still deserted, and even though Rickle had killed a whole squad of guards, the other crew were nowhere to be found. Perhaps they'd locked themselves in a safe room somewhere. It didn't matter. Rickle was with her. None of them could touch her. Aaron spotted a comm station and brought up a list of all vessels within range. The Arwen was one of the first on the list. "Arwen, this is the... She didn't know the name of this vessel.
"Silver Mist, I hear you and I have your ID, but I don't see you on my tracking panel. You got cloaking technology activated?"
It was Baraka. He paused.
"Is that you, Sergeant Varga?"
"It's me. Long story." Aaron played with the holoscreen settings, but for some reason she couldn't get their images to appear.
"You have to get me out of..."
His frantic voice was cut off abruptly.
"Where is Rickle?"
And replaced with a far scarier one. This voice promised terrible things if the answer wasn't to his satisfaction.
"I'm right here, Kale."
Rickle leaned casually against an instrument panel, a cocky smile playing on his lips.
"Been waiting for you for a while now. Did you get lost?" "Is your comm broken again? We've been trying to reach you."
This person, called Kale, sounded very, very grumpy.
"I ran into a small problem. My comm might have gotten a little damaged in the process, but the problem's been fixed now,
and I've managed to capture a better ship for you." Aaron heard a sigh of relief from Baraka.
"What ship?"
Suspicion clouded Kale's hard voice.
"We can't see you on our tracking system."
Rickle shrugged.
"We shouldn't be too far away. Human vessels can't travel very fast."
A bright idea entered Aaron's head. "This vessel has some sort of cloaking on it, and I have no idea how to deactivate it. I'm not a tech head or a navigator. The silver mist won't be visible on ordinary tracking screens. So, why don't we eject the ship's escape pods? They'll send out an alert to all Federation ships in the vicinity, and you'll be able to track their trajectory from this exact point."
"Sounds feasible," Baraka muttered.
Kale grunted in assent.
"Well, let's do it then."
Rickle came up behind Aaron, wrapping his arms around her torso, his sneaky hands snaking in between the straps that held her guns in place. He nuzzled her neck, nipping her gently with his fangs.
"Not that I'm allowing you to get anywhere near the inside of an escape pod again. Not after what happened last time. Your species are an untrustworthy bunch, Mayashika," he whispered in her ear, so softly only she would be able to hear him.
Aaron shuddered in a good way as Rickle pulled her against him, planting soft kisses along her neck.
"They're still on the calm," she mouthed silently,
feeling self-conscious all of a sudden, even though nobody could see them.
"Kale," Rickle called, bringing his hands up so that they grazed Aaron's sensitive breasts.
"Yeah?"
"You got that?"
"Yeah."
"Coming?"
"Yeah. Don't do anything stupid in the meantime, pretty boy. I'm tired of chasing your silver ass around this backwater galaxy."
"Don't worry, Dark One. Barring another gas leak, explosion, Zargek infestation, or missile attack, we're not going anywhere."
"Hmm."
Kale cut the comm with an irritated grunt. Aaron turned and looked up at Rickle. "He's a surly one, isn't he?"
"Kale has his moments," Rickle said cryptically. "Let's go down and eject these escape pods of yours. Then I believe there are still humans to be found on this vessel."
He tightened his arms, wrapping Aaron in a warm embrace.
"Even though I just want to stand here and hold you for a while."
"You can do that afterwards," Aaron murmured, a warm, fuzzy feeling rising up inside her. She was madly, hopelessly compromised, and she wouldn't have it any other way.
Chapter 32 Voices drifted through the walls, tickling Rickle's sensitive hearing.
"Found you," he whispered.
He tapped on the wall and was rewarded with a hollow echo. There was a room on the other side, and there were humans inside.
"In there?"
Aaron frowned, scrutinizing the section Rickle was pointing to. Her blue eyes flicked up and down, searching for an opening.
"Are you sure?"
"I'm rarely wrong about these kinds of things."
The other warriors thought he was a bit insane, but sometimes Rickle thought he could feel things, hunches and so on. Aaron tapped gently along the wall, looking for some kind of door or entry point. But it was seamless. Rickle shrugged.
"We'll wait until the others get here. Then I'll just cut it with something made from Kalidum. They can't escape. I just want to have a little chat with the woman who thought she could blow me into oblivion."
"Little chat?" Aaron's tone was skeptical. "I suspect your idea of a little chat differs from my definition of a little chat."
"Yes, but we have the same goals in mind, don't we?"
Aaron shot him an exasperated look. My goal isn't to kill every human or alien who rubs me the wrong way.
She tried to kill me with missiles, and she was going to kill you, Rickle growled, his killing intent rising as he remembered the blank-faced woman who had snatched his precious Aaron away and left him to die in the escape pod. Revenge is my blood right. He paused, studying his mate carefully. Some of the things she said baffled him. He couldn't understand the way humans thought sometimes. Or maybe it was females in general. Rickle shook his head. How are you able to be so calm about it after what she did to you? If you wish, I will grant you first choice of weapons and first choice of retribution. He moved closer to her, inhaling her intoxicating scent. She definitely had a calming effect on him. Without her nearby, he would probably still be seething with rage. I'm more angry about what she did to you, Aaron said quietly, her eyes cold and clear. I'm furious. If I think about it too much, I scare myself, because I think about doing terrible things to her. And then I realize that I'm not the noble peacekeeper I thought I was. You wish for revenge? Very much so. But our culture is different from yours, Rickle. We don't make revenge into an art form. We have laws to deal with this kind of thing. When you killed those men back there, a part of me rejoiced because I wanted them to die. There was a small part of me that took savage delight in it. And that terrified me, because it showed me that I'm capable of terrible things. But revenge is a natural part of life. Rickle was struggling to understand her logic. Humans seemed to believe in justice without bloodshed. Was such a thing possible? Not where I'm from, it isn't. Aaron pressed herself against him with a sense of ease that pleased him greatly. But in this case, I can see your side of the argument, and I can see why you consider it justified. I'm just trying not to give in to my darker urges. Compared to humans, you Cordolians possess so much power. Being so close to it is a little scary and a little intoxicating, and in the face of all that, I'm just asking myself whether I'm still capable of doing the right thing. Ah. Rickle blinked, trying to comprehend her reasoning. You're trying to be just and follow the laws of your people. Something like that. And are you certain justice can be done in your so-called Federation? Actually, no. Aaron looked up at him, with her pink lips slightly parted, and Rickle was tempted to devour her in a devastating kiss. But this was a serious conversation, so he restrained himself. Something was being pressed into the palm of his hand. It had the familiar weight of sweet, pure Calydum. So, on this occasion, she said softly, I'll ignore the law, because the law has ignored us, and look what happened. Just don't kill any of the other humans, and try not to kill that woman, E1, if you can avoid it. Promise me, Rickle. Her tone became stern, her clear blue eyes like chips of ice. Rickle's fingers curled around the familiar hilt of one of his throwing daggers. You kept this? His eyes widened in surprise. Hidden in my flight jacket. I only ended up using one of them. You can open up the wall with it, right? Naturally. Fine. Do what you have to do, but promise. Rickle sighed. I promise not to kill any of the other humans. She curled an arm around his neck
and kissed him. We walk a fine line, don't we, my Cordolian?
Between life and death, or right and wrong?
Both, she murmured. And ever since you entered my life, you've turned everything upside down.
I don't know what that means, but it sounds like a good thing.
Rickle couldn't hold on any longer. He returned her kiss, making sure it was deep and devastating enough that Aaron was reluctant to let go. She sighed. Upside down in zero-G isn't a bad thing at all.
Chapter 33. When the cavalry finally arrived, Aaron was the one to operate the mobile airlock, going back and forth between the Arwen and the Silver Mist until Taurine, Jarl, and Kale were safely on board the surveillance cruiser. Two of the warriors had stayed behind on the Arwen to make sure Baraka and Loic didn't make a quick dash for it. And Rickle had managed to cut a hole in the wall with a throwing knife, retrieving the rest of the Silver Mist's crew, along with a shaken-looking E-1. Aaron's suspicions had been right. After all the guards had been killed, they'd holed up in a safe room, thinking they could hide from a Cordolian warrior. To Aaron's surprise, Rickle hadn't killed E-1, but she looked as if he'd taught her the true meaning of fear. Aaron had regarded her coldly before deciding she wasn't worth her time. She wasn't the type to rub salt in one's wounds. Luckily for the one known as E-2, he'd already been medevaced to Earth, suffering a punctured lung, a pneumothorax, and some severed thoracic blood vessels. He'd already received punishment by Aaron's hand. At first, Aaron had wanted to torture the expressionless female agent until she got some genuine emotion out of her. But upon seeing how the woman had cowered in fear every time Rickle stalked past, Aaron realized she wouldn't get any satisfaction out of it. E-1 was a defeated woman, and Aaron couldn't find anything more to say to her. In this case, revenge wasn't sacred. It was pointless. Besides, there was enough evidence on this ship to damn the lot of them. Aaron would hand them over to the Federation, ensuring everything went through the proper channels. Even though she didn't entirely trust the Federation to be transparent after what she'd seen on board the Silver Mist, she had to try and respect the process of her nation. Otherwise, there would only be lawlessness and chaos, especially now that she had her own lethal Cordolian, who seemed to do certain things on her behalf. When Aaron opened up a line to the FSS Marsha, Rickle was sitting beside her, and the other warriors were lurking in the background, their hard gazes fixed upon her.
"Aaron."
Her mother appeared, and this time she was in her chambers, having lost her severe military jacket.
"Mom."
Aaron hadn't called her mother that in years.
"I thought you were... I mean, the escape pod signal just winked out, just like that."
Her mother's normally pristine hair was disheveled, and the crisp white shirt she wore was unbuttoned at the collar. Underneath, her eyes were deep, dark circles.
"My encounter with non-human affairs didn't go so well. It wasn't just a routine debrief.
Did you know anything about that?"
"No."
General Varga's eyes widened as she glanced uneasily at the Cordolians surrounding Aaron, particularly at Rickle.
"What happened? I thought it was just going to be a routine debrief and interview before they returned you to the Marsha."
"It wasn't that simple. I won't go into detail right now, but there are some very shady agencies operating within the Federation. I think you should send some of your people to scour this ship and confiscate all available data. I don't know how well the military communicates with non-human affairs,
but you might find some of the information quite useful and rather incriminating.
Of course, I'll do that, but are you all right, Aaron?
Allison Varga had dropped the military facade, and now genuine concern for her daughter shone through. Aaron hadn't seen her like this since she was a small child. The last time she'd seen her mother vulnerable like this had been the day her father had left. She'd been 6 years old. Aaron could have chosen to be cold right now, like her mother had been to her for so many years. She could have given in to all her pent-up anger and resentment. But instead, she offered her mother a small smile. "I am fine," she said quietly, reaching out to squeeze Rickle's hand. It wasn't much, but it was a start. They had years of conflict to resolve, and that would take time. It had only taken an alien invasion, a Zargek infestation, a few nuclear missiles, and a near-death experience to get to this point. But Aaron was ready to make inroads. After all, life was too damn short. She'd learned that today. General Varga was staring at the two of them, and Aaron realized she could see them holding hands. Oops. She'd done it without thinking, because being around Rickle was starting to feel so damn natural. But if her mother noticed, she didn't give any indication. She nodded stiffly towards the Cordolians.
"I have to extend my thanks to all of you. Your efforts to get the people of Fortuna Tau to safety have saved a great many lives. You'll be pleased to know that the Senate Committee has made its decision and that the Federation will cooperate with your mission to rid Earth of the Zargak. An escort will assist your transfer to Nyaia, and once on the ground, you'll receive logistical support from us."
"Took you long enough," Rickle muttered under his breath, and Aaron stamped on his foot. He grinned. "Silly idiot." "So I'm not in trouble then?"
Aaron winced, expecting a reprimand. And there was still the trail of bodies Rickle had left behind. As an alien operating in space, he didn't come under Earth's jurisdiction, but the carnage would definitely make some people on Earth very uncomfortable if news of it got out. An uneasy expression flitted across her mother's face.
"I only have so much influence in the military, Aaron. After the incident with Admiral Davis, my currency is all but spent when it comes to you."
Aaron only half understood what her mother was talking about.
"So I'm going to be in trouble?"
Had her mother actually tried to help her 2 years ago? She'd always thought the general had been part of the problem, because she hadn't objected at all when Aaron had been shipped off to the mining station. She hadn't even been there to see her off. But perhaps her mother had cared more than she'd thought.
"Honestly, I don't know. You broke protocol. There's usually a consequence for that. I'll try my best to make them understand, but there are quite a number of people in the upper ranks who detest you for what you did to the Admiral. They're looking for any excuse to kick you out of the military. I can't make any promises."
Aaron sighed and waved a dismissive hand in the air. "Don't worry about it." She had a plan to resign before the higher-ups could slap her with a dishonorable discharge. After all, she was hopelessly compromised. She'd been sleeping with the enemy, and that wasn't going to change anytime soon. As the calm ended, Rickle turned to her, a spark of interest glimmering in his golden eyes.
"What's this I hear about you offending some big shot? Tell me more."
He grinned conspiratorially, flashing his fangs. For some reason, the idea seemed to please him. Aaron gave him a wry look. It's old news. Back in the day when I was a young officer looking to make a name for myself, an asshole called Admiral Davis thought he could force his way into my pants. He found out that he couldn't, and in the process, he ended up with a broken nose and two black eyes. She grinned. And that's why you found me on Fortuna Tau. I got exiled.
I'm so glad to hear that.
Rickle returned her smile with his own fierce look.
For numerous reasons, of course, but most importantly, because I would never have met you if you hadn't given the man what he deserved. I would kill him for you, but it sounds like you've already dispensed your own brand of justice.
He stroked her bare knuckles in admiration, ignoring the disbelieving stares of his fellow warriors. A warm glow spread through Aaron in response to Rickle's obvious approval. He was right. Even though she'd been treated unjustly on that fateful day, being sent to Fortuna Tau had turned out to be a blessing in disguise. She'd actually come to like the role. She'd been promoted on her own merits. And now, she'd met Rickle.
"Strong hands, strong heart," he whispered, "and just perfect for me."
Chapter 34. 2 weeks later. Aaron ducked into the mobile dwelling, the door banging behind her as she escaped the fierce wind outside. Tiny, stinging particles of sand had hit her, and now they coated her face, hair, and lower arms. The dust storm had rolled in from the west, blackening the sky and engulfing everything before it. She shrugged off her coat, dropping it in the small foyer as she kicked off her boots and brushed off the sand. She walked through to the living area, appreciating the relative coolness of her surroundings. The dwelling was a sturdy structure, made from wafer-thin semi-concrete. It had a bedroom, a living area, all the mod cons one could desire, and had been assembled in a little under 2 hours. It was superbly insulated, too, specially designed to withstand the heat of the North African desert. When the Cordolians had proved themselves useful, and the public had expressed their approval, the Federation had suddenly become very kind to them, providing them with state-of-the-art accommodation and a surprising amount of logistical support. The only people who'd really objected to the First Division's presence had been the archaeologists working on the dig site called Gara. Gara was a network of ancient temples and tunnels beneath the desert sands that had been invaded by Zargek. But in the end, they'd acquiesced, because everyone knew the Zargek would do far more damage to the historical site than the Cordolians. Aaron reached the lounge, the auto light switching on as she entered the room. "Network on," she commanded, and a flat screen came to life. Aaron sank down into a low chair and watched as a news bulletin came on.
"Latest reports from the Gara archaeological dig site in Naia are that the Cordolian warriors are finally managing to hold the Zargek terror at bay. Zargek-related deaths in the nearby settlement town of Fadar have dropped sharply over the past week, and so far, fears of a Cordolian-fronted invasion have yet to manifest. In other news, the prime investigation into the Department of Planetary Security continues. At the center of the scandal is a recently confiscated surveillance ship reported to contain highly incriminating evidence. Several employees allegedly involved in violations of Federation law have been stood down, pending further investigation."
Aaron sighed and switched off the flat screen. So far, none of the news networks had mentioned the carnage Rickle had wrought on board the Silver Mist. Her mother had handed the ship over to the Prime Investigator, and once the Federation had realized exactly how effective the Cordolians were at fighting the Zargek, certain problems had mysteriously disappeared. except for one. Erin reached for her link band.
"Yo, Rihanna," she said.
"Yo, Erin," her former junior officer replied, picking up on the first ring.
"Any leads?"
"Plenty of leads. It's just a case of figuring out which ones are genuine. Have you heard of Scarabus?"
"Not at all."
Rihanna's voice dropped to a conspiratorial near whisper.
"This is deep shit, Sarge. Secret society shit.
It's an organization of sorts, and there are some very powerful people behind it. Political people. Corporate people. Off-planet people. Government people. Most of the leads I've picked up from the Fortuna Tau explosion trace back to them."
"Huh."
"Huh is right. I've gone as far as I can go electronically. The rest will have to be done on the ground. I should get my brother to look into it. He's got his PI license, even though he never uses it."
Erin brushed a stray sprinkling of sand off her pant leg. Outside, the dust storm raged, its full fury hitting the sturdy walls of the dwelling.
"The Cordolians will want to send one of theirs to help out. This is personal for them, too. They see revenge as their blood right. But trust me, the benefit will be all yours. They can come in very, very handy."
"Blood right?"
Rihanna sounded a little panicked.
"You're beginning to sound like one of them, Sarge. It's because of that boyfriend of yours, isn't it? You've been hanging out with them for too long."
"When they let me know who they want to send, I'll get him to contact you."
"Me?"
Rihanna's voice rose an octave.
You can't let them contact me. I'm just the socially awkward IT girl. I'm not going to go traipsing across planets searching for secret organizations with some stone-cold killer."
"But Rihanna," Erin said, her voice taking on a teasing note, "you're the best genius hacker I know. And besides, they're guests on our planet. It's our job to show them around, make them feel comfortable, make sure they don't kill anybody."
"Erin," Rihanna protested, "I am not going to help you with this mission anymore if you force me to work with one of them."
"There's that small matter of all that illegal porn that was mysteriously downloaded on Fortuna Tau and sold for significant profit. I have witnesses."
"But Sergeant..."
"I'm not Sergeant anymore, Rihanna. They DD'd me as soon as I set foot on Sweet Earth soil." She'd been expecting the dishonorable discharge, but the speed with which the military had dumped her had stung a little. She hadn't even been able to put in her resignation notice, and just like that, her dream of a military career had been over. At first, all she'd ever wanted was to prove herself in the military, to walk in her mother's shadow and become a brilliant officer, so that the high-flying General Varga would finally acknowledge her. But life had a funny way of changing direction when you least expected it. Not that Erin was so bothered about it now. She had bigger and better things to look forward to, and she'd won the biggest prize of all. Her tone softened. "Don't worry, Rihanna. It'll be fun, trust me. Cordolians aren't as bad as they look. Well, they are, but they aren't. You'll see what I mean."
"Erin!"
Terror flooded Rihanna's voice.
"You can't..."
"I'll let you know when he's coming over. Thanks again, Rihanna." Erin terminated the calm as the door flew open, revealing a vortex of wild red dust whipped up by the hot desert wind. Sand was streaming into the foyer, and on the threshold stood a familiar black figure. He was in full warrior mode, his helm concealing his features, his body bristling with weapons. He was a terrifying sight against the murky, shadowy red backdrop of the dust storm.
"Shut the damn door!"
Erin yelled, struggling to be heard above the howling wind. You're letting sand into the house again. The figure inclined his head and slammed the door shut, dropping all his weapons and stalking across the floor to where she sat. He loomed above her, a menacing figure in his obsidian exo-armor. He peered down at her through his impenetrable black visor, his features completely concealed. Of course, there was a good reason for his appearance. He'd been fighting Zargak again. Aaron glared at him, even though heat was pooling between her thighs. You do that on purpose, just because you know it irritates me, don't you? Little by little, the black armor started to melt away, fading into minuscule particles that were swallowed up by his skin until he stood before her in all his naked silver glory. Don't you, Rickle? He didn't say a word. His expression was deadly serious, his golden eyes glimmering with dangerous heat. Rickle? He was starting to make her nervous and completely fucking aroused. Aaron yelped as he scooped her up in his powerful arms and carried her to the bed. Chapter 35. He still didn't speak. He just lay her amongst the disheveled sheets and started to strip her, fumbling with the zipper of her pants until he became too impatient and just tore the damn thing. Aaron would have grumbled, because that was the second set of trousers he'd ruined this week, but she was too fucking horny to be irritated by his enthusiasm. He tore off her white t-shirt, too, until she was just lying there in her bra and undies, her pussy throbbing with need. His eyes burned into her. He moved over her, poised like a big cat about to devour its prey. He brushed the sand from her forehead and cheeks and kissed her lips. At first, he was gentle, but it didn't take long for him to become savage with his kisses. He kissed her for a long fucking time, probing her mouth with his strong, naughty tongue. One of his hands dropped to her pussy. He trailed his fingers over the thin fabric, covering her sex. It was soaked. He growled in approval and tore at her panties, unable to control himself any longer. With her bra, he did the same, not being one to bother with delicacy and fastenings and all that sort of nonsense. Aaron lay on her back, staring up at him, unable to believe her good fortune. She'd been stressing over secret organizations and dishonorable discharges and covert government agencies when he'd come in with the storm, a dark, menacing, beautiful tempest. And all he wanted was her. She was naked now, and so was he. His erection hung before her, proud and massive and mouth-watering. Bending his head, he took one of her erect nipples into his mouth, rolling it slowly between his tongue and lips until she moaned with pleasure, closing her eyes. He did the same with the other, before trailing hot, molten kisses down her belly. He kissed the outer lips of her pussy, kissed her inner thighs, and kissed the wet folds inside, finding her throbbing clit. He rolled her precious nub between his lips, sucking it back and forth, teasing out a kind of pleasure that was so delicious, so rare, so orgasmic, that Aaron arced her back and thrust her hand through his hair, twisting it as she bucked and writhed, needing him more and more. Then he would flick his long tongue deep inside her and fuck her with it before returning to caress her exquisitely sensitive clit with his mouth. He skillfully drew out her orgasm and then cheekily held her at the precipice, denying her climax as he watched her. He stared at her from below, enjoying his moment of mastery over her body. He watched her with his searing gaze until she was forced to close her eyes, and little by little, he teased her back towards the edge. She was in agony and ecstasy as he built up her pleasure, then relented.
"So close." "Please," she cried. "Please, Rickle."
He hit her in just the right spot and pushed her over the edge. She cried out as the wind howled outside, her body twisting and glistening with sweat as he moved to straddle her. He kneeled over her, looked proudly upon her as she pulled him forward, taking his cock into her mouth. She kissed the glistening tip of his erection, then moved her lips down his hard length, taking in every inch of him, back and forth, until he broke his silence for the very first time with a cry of pleasure. His voice cracked, and he moaned in delight, pushing his fingers through her short hair. She gave him what he needed until he was close to breaking point. Then she slowly withdrew, running her tongue along the sensitive base of his cock, eliciting a great shudder from him. He rocked back on his haunches, grabbed her around her waist, and pulled her up towards him. "Turn around," he said, caressing the curves of her ass and her muscular thighs as she did just that. He grunted in satisfaction and slapped her ass hard before wrapping a strong hand around her neck and pushing her down, thrusting into her from behind. His thick length slid between her wet lips with ease, and it felt so damn good. He slid his hands up along her stomach, cupping her generous breasts and fondling her nipples as he settled into a fierce rhythm, and then proceeded to fuck her into oblivion. The storm howled outside, and they both sang their pleasure through grunts and moans, their voices combining in a primal harmony as they moved together, their bodies becoming one. He thrust inside her, going deeper and deeper, burying himself to the hilt, faster and faster, until she began to release full-throated cries. The sound of her voice seemed to spur him on even more, and he went wild with her, pushing her to the absolute limits of pleasure, gripping her breasts tightly, tasting the salty sweat against the delicate skin of her neck as he sank his fangs into her ever so slightly, marking her, claiming her. And then he fucked her over the edge as pain mingled with pleasure to create the single most wonderful sensation she'd ever experienced. She screamed her release, and he overlapped her cry with his own deep roar as he climaxed inside her with all the pent-up fury of a savage storm. Chapter 36. Later, when they lay in each other's arms, he kissed the top of her head and curled a lazy, possessive hand around one of her breasts. "I spent all day cooped up in those fucking catacombs, hunting Zargek that didn't want to be found, and all I could think about was you. Everything was pissing me off. The heat, the larvae, the infernal sand. I couldn't wait to get home to you. That's why I hid at first. I wanted to try and cool down, but when I saw you, I lost it. I had to have you. I wasn't trying to irritate you or anything like that." Aaron snuggled up against him, warm and safe in his arms. "You should never try and hide that from me," she said. "Ever." "I know." He tipped her chin up and kissed her on the lips. "Sometimes I just have trouble restraining my emotions. I can be impulsive." "Not impulsive,"
passionate. When it comes to you, always. We're good together, aren't we? The best. I will never know another. His words infused through her like warm, delicious honey, and Erin curled her arm around his waist, holding him tight. I don't want anyone else but you, she declared. Not now, not ever. Whatever happens, whatever the Empire or the Federation or the universe decide to throw at us, we'll deal with it together. Always, he agreed, holding her close. Always, she agreed, clutching him tightly as the storm finally died down outside and the dust settled upon the constantly shifting sands of the endless desert. And even though the universe was constantly shifting around them, throwing into motion changes that were way beyond their control, Erin felt a sense of calm amidst the storm, because Rickle was by her side, and when she was with him, she felt truly invincible. Together, they were complete. This concludes Forged in Shadow by Anna Carvin, narrated by Jillian Macy. Copyright 2016 by Anna Carvin. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Anna Carvin and was produced in the year 2018 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.